Today on the program, the Clean Water Act turns 40. Do you throw your vote away when you vote for a third party? And also, we're going to talk about decriminalizing sex work today on the San Diego Seculars. My name is Jason Fry. I'm the president of the Humanist Association of San Diego, and welcome to the program for Sunday, October 28th, 2012. So, I'm going to make this a bit of a short program today. Welcome to our ninth podcast. So, in top stories, Britain held its first Klingon wedding. And what happened was there was a Star Trek convention in London, and Josephine Sockertop and her fiancé, Sonny Gustafsson, from Sweden, went to that Star Trek convention, and they had a Klingon wedding. And in that Klingon wedding, according to Josephine Sockertop, she said, "I had not seen Star Trek until I had met him. He introduced me to it, and it was really good. The ceremony was his idea. I thought about it a lot and thought, let's do it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing." You know, I now pronounce the couple kablach. I don't know. So, okay. Another thing that happened this last week was this was the 40th anniversary of the signing of the Clean Water Act. Richard Nixon signed it into law on the 18th of October, 1972. And Nixon had said, "The pollution of our rivers, lakes, and streams degrades the quality of American life. Cleaning up the nation's waterways is a matter of urgent concern to me." And at that time, rivers, lakes, streams had a lot of pollution. They were regularly catching fire. And it's been argued that's one of the best arguments for government regulation, the success of the Clean Water Act, and the fact that we rarely, if ever, now have rivers, lakes, and streams ablaze. On top of that, when the Clean Water Act was signed, which the Clean Water Act made it illegal for any person to discharge pollution into navigable waters in the U.S., and it gave the EPA regulatory authority to implement pollution control programs, such as wastewater standards, and, you know, set contaminant standards for our navigable waters. And at that time, two-thirds of American waterways were found to be unfit for fishing. Not just unfit for swimming, but unfit for fishing as well. And I think this is a fantastic idea, you know. In the last 2 years, I think I read something this week that said something to the effect that in the last 2 years there have been 300 anti-environmental pieces of legislation that have been voted on in Congress. And I think that we need to continually work as stewards of our environment, you know, not just for ourselves, but for future generations. And when we talk about things like groundwater, that's covered by the Safe Drinking Water Act. And I don't know, what would happen if we got rid of this? And if we got rid of this, we would, you know, definitely see a degradation of the commons, that which belongs to all of us, you know, rather than, you know, today, rather than having private companies just pollute and contaminate the commons for their own private interest and private development, we have at least some regulation over that which is ours, our shared national, true national treasure, which is our environment, you know. And so, you know, happy birthday, Clean Water Act. You know, may you have another 40 years. And how's your water? So, in a study that came out, I thought this was interesting. We talked about this last night at Coffee and Conversation. It came out under a Market Force information survey that of 7,600 consumers on food, quality, taste, service, and atmosphere. The number one burger chain out of the study in the nation is Five Guys. You know, and that is followed by In-N-Out, Fuddruckers, A&W, Smashburger, Culver's, Steak and Shake, Whataburger, Carl's Jr., Wendy's, Sonic, Burger King, Hardee's, McDonald's, Jack in the Box, and Dairy Queen. Ronald is crying. Anyway, yeah, I don't, we talk about these little fluff stories at first just because I think they're interesting, and we explore them, just to know about what's happening. And in related news to this, there are several counselors in the District of Columbia, city counselors or district counselors, and they're considering doing what, New York did, which is ban large sugary beverages from retail establishments. And so I don't know. I think that's really interesting that the best burger places aren't those quickie fast food places, but ones that actually spend more time and care. Probably a better quality of meat too. And I don't know. I think it's interesting that Five Guys beat In-N-Out, perhaps because In-N-Out is not as, I don't know where Five Guys is located in general, but In-N-Out, they're just in California, so maybe that's part of the reason. I also think it's interesting that on the packaging, In-N-Out has Bible verses, and I don't know, scripture and sundries. That's what I'll call it, scripture and sundries. So, what do you guys think of this? What's your favorite burger chain? I'm gonna figure out how to do a call-in show and a live thing, and that'll be cool. If somebody who's listening to the podcast, because I know more people are listening to it now, if somebody who's listening to the podcast and you know how to do that, let's set it up. Let's get a cable access show started. Let's get a call-in thing. Let's do what the Atheist Experience and Nonprofits Radio do. Let's get a live thing. And also, the San Diego New Atheists and Agnostics had a wonderful Halloween party last night and talked to a few people. And a few people are interested in guest co-hosting, and I hope you enjoy them. They're going to be fantastic. I'm figuring out how to get this working. And if you guys have a better technological acumen than I do, please help me. I want this podcast to expand. I think we talk about good things. And, sometimes I admit I'm a little off my game and I'm trying, and I am trying to do a really good thing for the community and to, have a good discussion. Okay, so next in our top stories, humanist philosopher Paul Kurtz died last Sunday, last Saturday night, I believe. It's a huge loss to the community, and I think more people need to know who Paul Kurtz is. We have the modern atheist movement has a great deal to thank Paul Kurtz. Paul Kurtz wrote over 40 books. He wrote over eight. I think I was reading. He read something like eight. Wrote something like 8,000 essays. I've read a couple of his books. My favorite out of his books is Exuberance. I highly recommend that one about living an exuberant life. Where Kurtz writes, there is no meaning to life per se, but there's plenty of opportunities. He was just brilliant. He wrote the Humanist Manifesto 2, and he updated it with the Humanist Manifesto 3. He was a big player at the AHA. He went off to found the Council for Secular Humanism. I really wish I could have met him. I would have really liked to have met him. And I think we have had a major loss. But much like when strong and pivotal and prolific figures pass away, I think that this may be a good chance to introduce, all these new people to Dr. Kurtz's work, because his work is just as useful and wonderful today as it was back in the 60s, 70s, and he's continued to work. That's the thing too. So if you guys haven't looked him up, I highly recommend you check out Dr. Paul Kurtz, because he was awesome, and you'll love his work as well. So, separation of church and state news. The American Humanist Association is seeking the removal of the American Legion's 40 foot Bladensburg, Maryland Peace Cross, which is on government land. It was erected by the American Legion back in 1920, but it is on government land. It's not on private land, which is essentially a government neon sign advertising Christianity. And then we have in Florida Amendment 8, and Amendment 8 is trying to eliminate a provision in the Florida State Constitution that calls for no aid to religion. And what the people who are trying to put out this constitutional amendment, Amendment 8, are trying to do is they're trying to mask this in the language of school vouchers. That's using, public funds, tax revenue to send kids to Christian school. But this one is more than just Christian school. It's the Muslim school or Jewish school or any other number of faiths. And I don't know. I feel secure with, the government and religion staying out of each other's business, especially because religion sometimes inserts certain, I would say, philosophically and morally unseemly ideas, such as sin and this weird contrived hierarchy between God and man. And at the same time, these funds should be spent on public schools. It's the public's money that goes to the government. It should be spent on public schools. If there is a God, it needs no aid from human beings to uphold and upkeep its little indoctrination stations. And if they're not doing so well, perhaps they should take a note. The schools and the church bodies, if they're not doing so well, perhaps they should take a note from their colleagues in India. And if their God's not paying the bills, they need to fire their God and get another one. Guess what? There's plenty of gods to choose from. And if yours isn't working, shop around. I know that I'll have an argument from that. There's only one God. Okay. That's cute. But they're couching their discussion in the language of school vouchers, and they're calling it a religious freedom amendment. And I don't know. I don't like this idea, and I think that it will be found unconstitutional if someone sues on it. What do you guys think of this? Speaking of unconstitutional, the city of Raleigh, North Carolina, their city council has allocated $150,000 to host a Jehovah's Witness convention. And since 2008, Raleigh has allocated $875,000 to support and subsidize the operations of the Jehovah's Witnesses in North Carolina. And my thought on this also goes back to that idea. If your God has these substantive powers, it doesn't need public assistance. It could just give you cash, or it could just place those buildings right there in a wink of a divine eye. But what the city is citing is the public benefit of having the increased commerce from these conventions. Okay, well, at the same time, essentially this is entangling government and religion, because when you give out public funds, you can also have public accountability to the public agencies. And so that's also part of the separation of church and state when we consider it abhorrent, because it is entangling government into the affairs of religion. It swings both ways. Like back in 1630, when Roger Williams, who founded the Baptist, came out saying and coining the separation of church and state, saying, "We need a separation of church and state to protect the garden of faith from the wilderness of the world." And then Thomas Jefferson came out 80 years later saying something to the effect, and no, it, yeah, it was 80 years later. No, sorry, 70 years later, 73 years later, came out speaking to the Danbury Baptists saying, "Well, yes, we need a separation of church and state," but he meant for completely different reasons, with different aims, different goals, but, in equal and equivalent ends. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Comment on the Facebook page, send us an email, humanistsd as in humanist San Diego at gmail.com. Or, like I said, comment on the Facebook page. And going forward, in the pernicious piety segment, Saad al-Khatatni, the chairman of the Egyptian Freedom and Justice Party, came out saying that the Muslim Brotherhood established the Freedom and Justice Party to represent the Brotherhood's political project, which in the end will be a wise government that will institute Islamic Sharia law. And at the moment, the Islamic Freedom and sorry, the Freedom and Justice Party holds 47% of the lower house. When you have that, you have control over coalition building. And the problem with this is that Sharia is based upon divine doctrine and what the clergy has how the clergy has defined and navigated divine doctrine. And it's not based in popular sovereignty. It has a whole capricious element to it that these divine doctrine things are conveniently inflexible when the clergy desires it to be. And at the same time, it's completely negotiable when it's expeditious for the clergy. And so I think that, you know, what's happened in Egypt is it's just essentially, and I'll get to this later, actually I'll get to it now, there was an Egyptian TV host who has been sentenced to 4 months in jail for insulting Mohammed Morsi. And, you know, no mercy from Morsi, I guess. And the prosecutor in the case came out saying that by insulting the president, it's as though you've insulted the entire nation. And we look at Egypt, and essentially it just appears that what they've done is, you know, exchanged one dictator for another. They've essentially reshuffled the deck. And another, you know, jackass has come out on top of the pile. So, I don't know. I think this is a terrible thing. I don't like religion and government, because it leads to outstanding tyranny, because your justification is far removed from your immediate vicinity. You place it too far away. You place it beyond the stars. You place it beyond the material realm into the land of spiritual substance, where, you know, you argue that's the will of God, and then you argue that God is ineffable. And if God is ineffable, then we can't describe his will, because his will is beyond our comprehension. So how do we go about describing his will? By what a handful of people have said that has endured throughout time and had little changes, you know, had little changes constantly and consistently. But then when they do that, they say, oh no, it's perfect, and how could it have changed, yada yada yada. So this just seems like a really convenient avenue to tyranny. And so, you know, Egypt, you could have had freedom. Guess this is sort of like a Marlon Brando on the waterfront thing. I could have been a free state. I could have been a contender, Charlie, I guess. But shame, 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 shame. And this is sort of sad. There is a gentleman, 45-year-old pizza worker out of Newburgh, New York. His name is David Jimenez. His wife developed ovarian cancer, and he went frequently to his church, where there was a 600-pound crucifix, and he prayed to it, 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 and his wife went into remission for ovarian cancer. And he attributed the cause of his wife's remission not that of modern medicine, but of the efficacy of his prayers to the statue. And, you know, fortunately his wife went into remission, but then he said, I want to clean the cross in gratitude, because apparently the cross had been long neglected. And apparently the cross was held up by one single screw, and while Jimenez was cleaning the cross, it dislodged the screw, and the cross fell on top of him and took his leg. It crushed his leg, which had to be amputated. And so it's sad, you know, that these things happen. And on top of that, Jimenez is now suing his church. And his church has put $7,000 together to help take care of him. But, you know, that's just, you know, that's just the sad part of superstition. You know, unintended consequences of superstition and just bad luck. And on top of this, for the last thing of pernicious piety, there's a Christian woman and a blogger by the name of Rachel Held Evans, and she decided to live by the biblical standards for women for 1 year. And there was a book that came out a couple years ago, a few years back, called The Year of Living Biblically, and she's sort of copying what that book did. And her book is called A Year of Biblical Womanhood. And what she's written in it is she wrote about letting her hair grow long, calling her husband master, standing with a sign proclaiming how great her husband is at the gate of the town, And let's see what else. She made her own clothes. She woke before dawn every day. And then during her menstrual cycle, she would sleep in a tent in her backyard. She said that she honored most of the commandments for women outside of polygamy and a few quote unquote other things. And apparently, what we talked about last night, I can't remember if it was Rob or Mickey who brought this up, but apparently the Christians in her community were upset with her because they thought that she was trying to do this to mock the Bible. And, isn't that a bit conspicuous that they uphold this document? And when someone actually follows it to the letter of the law, they're, immediately a suspect as someone who is trying to insult rather than someone who's trying to embrace what it actually says rather than being a cafeteria Christian. And so, I don't know. This seems really interesting. I'm going to get this book and I will tell you my review of this book. And it looks like it'll be a decent read. But I don't know. It might be boring, someone tries to follow an ancient text and deals with it. She said it was hard living as a strict biblical Christian. But, I guess if you decide to follow fairy tales and you get dressed up and you sneak into a bear cave wearing a blonde wig, you might get attacked if you try to eat their porridge. So, I don't know. sorry, I'm coming down with a cold, I think. So I want to talk about this too. And there's an election happening right now, and I want to preface this by saying that this is not a partisan discussion per se. This is more of a criticism of the system rather than a discussion on the merits of different parties. In fact, I'm not going to leave anybody out, and I'm not going to talk about their platforms, not at all. I'm not going to talk about who stands for what they stand against, who is most like them, but I am going to mention names. And I'm going to mention them. The names that I do mention are going to be listed in the order of the California Secretary of State's website, because I do want to discuss this issue, but I don't want to go into endorsement or dissuasion. So when I am prefacing this a lot, I know, but I want this to be seen not as any type of endorsement towards candidates, but more of a critique of the system. And I think we need a critique of the system, especially because I don't think it works so well, especially with such a diverse, an ideologically diverse population as we have. And here's what it boils down to. People say, don't vote for a third party, you're throwing your vote away. Well, where does this come from? There's two major electoral systems out there today. There is what's called single member district, and there's another called proportional representation. In the single member district system, what you get is it's called first past the post. You vote for a candidate, and that candidate who receives the majority of the votes or reaches a particular number before the other candidate, usually a majority, they get the office. And that's the United States, for example. We do that. I believe that's Mexico too. And what you get in the other type, that's proportional representation, you often vote a party. And that party is usually clear in its ideology, and those parties delegate who's going to represent them in the legislature. And so you vote a party and you vote your second choice often. And what happens is the parties receive the number of seats per the percentage of the vote that they get, proportional representation. And in that, you get a greater articulation of the greater spectrum of ideology and belief from the country, from the nation. You have the aspect as well. When you have these proportional representative systems, you have the aspect in the legislature of coalition building. So sometimes the far leftists have to work with the far rightists, or the centrists have to work with the far rightists or far leftists in order to get anything done. But in that, they have to compromise. And keeping in mind, in the US, we have political parties where we have different interest groups within the parties, you know, far right, far left, that type of thing. And they have to compromise. So it kind of happens at a minuscule level at the parties themselves. And I don't know. I think that the United States could benefit from having a greater ideological swath of opinion outside of just, you know, two particular candidates. When you get a single member district, typically it goes to two candidates. It concentrates down to two candidates. But then again, in the United States, instead of we have two major parties, well, we have, I think, five parties, which are considered major parties, and then we have quite a few minor parties. And at the same time, then we have these, you know, debates in which they're sponsored by television networks, and they usually include only two candidates, despite the fact that there are multiple candidates on the ballot in most states. For example, some, you know, they don't allow other candidates into the debates themselves. Jill Stein, for example, the Green candidate, is on 85% of the state ballots, I believe, but she was arrested when she tried to enter the presidential debate. I think it was the second one. It might have been the third, I forget. But she was arrested when trying to go into there. So if they're having a presidential debate, this is not an endorsement for or against Jill Stein. But if she is a legitimate presidential candidate, then she should be allowed to be up there. Gary Johnson should be allowed to be up there. Roseanne Barr, Thomas Hayfling, not just Romney and Obama. And, you know, they are on the ballot. They're a choice, but the corporate media gives us our choice that they assume we should have. And I don't know. It would be complex, and we might not get as much out of the candidates, and it might take more time. But, you know, an hour and a half, you know, for three times over the course of a month, as a job interview, well, that's a really important job. And you know, we have other options that we should look at too. It's not saying that Obama or Romney are not the likely victors or potential victors, because the Green Party, the American Independent Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Peace and Freedom Party, for example, they will probably receive less than 5% of the vote each, maybe even less than 1% of the vote. But at least they are legitimate candidates to consider. And we have such a limited scope. When we do that, we say these are the two candidates. These are the, and it doesn't matter who they are, usually Democratic or Republican. You know, it doesn't matter who they are because they change so frequently every 4 years. But we look at it and we say, these are your candidates. Well, no, you have more options than that. Sort of, I think it's sort of what is it, a bifurcation, I think that's what it's called when you are given two choices where there are more. And so I think that this needs to be amended a bit, you know. I think it was great back when Ross Perot was allowed to be a part of the debates because he was a viable candidate as well. I think that if this is our system and we have viable candidates who are on the state ballots, they've raised enough money to get their shit together in order to get the signatures to do so. And the parties are viable by American election standards, so they should be allowed to. I think our system is broken in that. It doesn't mean that they are likely to win. It doesn't mean that, because sometimes with those two candidates that are usually put up there from two particular parties, sometimes one is far more likely to win than the other. But in this, at least they are on the ballot and they're available to choose. So looking at that, you know, perhaps we should add a few more seats up there. Because when you have two particular candidates running against each other, they tend to slide towards each other ideologically to swing these days to swing towards the moderate votes. And so you, I don't know, you, I don't think that with just that limited option of trying to appeal towards moderate undecideds, that you get enough of a distinction between the particular candidate. Sorry, I just got a text message. So looking at this, and I'm kind of rambling a bit, I apologize. I think that we need to see our full options, especially because the position of the President of the United States is so important, and it so has such influence, and it has such authority. We need to see all of the options presented, and I personally would like to see more of the. I would like to see all of the legitimate candidates up on the dais, and so in California right now, we have Barack Obama, Jill Stein, Mitt Romney, Thomas Hayfling, Gary Johnson, and Roseanne Barr. And I got a robo survey call the other day that said, who are you voting for president? Press one for Barack Obama, press two for Mitt Romney, press three for undecided. And my thought was, well, wait a second. I may be voting for either of those two, or I may be voting for another candidate. And I don't like this. I don't like limiting our options, especially when something is so crucial. And it's not as though we haven't had other parties. The current parties have been around for quite a while. The Democratic Party has been around since 1828. The Republican Party has been around since 1854. But we've had a couple other parties pop up in the last few years. We've had the Libertarians pop up in 71, the Greens pop up in 91, and the Constitution Party pop up in 92. And we have a score of minor parties. We have the America First Party, the American Party, American Populist Party, American Third Position Party, Americans Elect 2011, America's Party, Christian Liberty Party, Citizens Party, Common Sense Party, Communist Party, International Meeting of Communist Workers Parties, Freedom Socialist Party, Independence Party, Independent American Party, Jefferson Republican Party, Justice Party, Labor Party, Modern Whig Party, National Socialist Movement, Objectivist Party, Party for Socialism and Liberation, Peace and Freedom Party, Prohibition Party, Raza Unida Party, Reform Party of the United States of America, Socialist Action Party, Fourth International Socialist Alternative, Committee for a Workers' International Socialist Equality Party, International Committee of the Fourth International Socialist Party, Socialist Workers' Party, Pathfinder Tendency, United States Marijuana Party, United States Pacifist Party, United States Pirate Party, United Unity Party of America, Whig Party. Apparently, that's still around some places since the 1830s, and Workers' World Party. So we have so many options to choose from, but we're told we have two. And I'm sure most people would vote for those two, but it's something to look at, and it's something to see what happens when we have those two particular condensed parties that are presented as our only option, and what happens then. And I think that George Washington was rather prophetic in his September 19th, 1796 farewell address. And in that, he said, "The disorders and the miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, and sooner or later, the chief of some prevailing faction, more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns this disposition to the purposes of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty. Without looking forward to an extremity of this kind, which nevertheless ought not to be entirely out of sight, the common and continual mischiefs of the spirit of party are sufficient to make it the interest and duty of a wise people to discourage and restrain it. It serves always to distract the public councils and enfeeble the public administration. It agitates the community with ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, kindles the animosity of one party against another, foments occasionally riot and insurrection. It opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which finds a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and the will of one country are subjected to the policy and will of another." And so, I don't know. I don't think most people are involved in their local parties, but I think one thing, I think Washington was so prophetic on this. What does he know? He was just the first president. Anyway, so I don't know. I don't necess I think that in this case, the way it's set up, we have these parties as, sports teams, as brand names. And considering I don't think the majority of Americans are even involved in their local parties, we have a lot of, we have some concerned citizens doing it. We have people essentially passing the buck on and just voting for who they like rather than communicating and articulating their interest immediately to the person who will be representing them as they pursue it. And so I think that this system needs some major overhaul, if not a complete switch. I'm a big proponent of proportional representation, if you can tell that already. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think voting for a third party is throwing your vote away? A lot of people do. Some people don't. Some people say that if more people did, it might be catastrophic at first towards these ends. But at the same time, within a couple election cycles, it might just balance the field out even more. And, I personally consider myself a liberal progressive, and that's how I'm ideologically slanted. And a lot of the time, I am not happy because I would like to see more liberal progressive things happen. I like to see more separation of church and state rather than pandering, where the election cycle seems more like running for the national deacon rather than the national chief executive officer. And I personally would like to see a greater diversification and representation of the spectrum of views in America. So I'm supportive of the idea of including third parties more into the discussion and electoral dialogue than just restricting down to two specific candidates. And it doesn't matter who those two candidates are, because undoubtedly, as it always seems, no matter who those candidates are, if one is more progressive or more conservative, or more, either or on either the Democrats or Republicans than their predecessors, it seems as though when they go right down to these elections, and I think it's just a product of the process, that they would pursue trying to appear more moderate, which I think they often do. And I don't think that we get, a good approximation of who these people really are and how they would otherwise govern when they're putting on the sheep's clothing of trying to, appeal to those, who are more moderate than they otherwise would be. And so that's what I think. And essentially, like I said, this is not any type of commentary on the ideology and political positions of the candidates themselves, either Romney or Obama. But this is my criticism on the system, which restricts our choices down to two, when, in fact, like I said, in California, one, two, three, four, five, six, we have, yeah, one, two, three, I have everything in parentheses, one, two, three, four, five, six. We have six people on the ballot running for president, yet what the corporate media makes us assume is we have two. And I think that's disingenuous. And so that's all I have to say on the subject. It's disingenuous. It would be better for us all if we would open up the floor to everybody who was a legitimate candidate. And I don't know. What do you guys think on this? Please email me, humaniststat@gmail.com. Comment on the Facebook group. And like I said, I'm not endorsing anybody. I'm criticizing the system, because it doesn't give us all of our choices. And I think that that's wrong. And so, moving forward in human rights, I think this is the. Okay, no, there's two more. Cool. The UN came out with a report saying that we need to decriminalize sex work. And, certain places like Nevada have done that. And what happens is you get regulations that come into place, so you have to go get tested for sexually transmitted infections. You don't have to hide as a criminal. And situations like pimps can be dealt with more effectively, and women have more agency. And on top of that, we have this idea of virtue of character attached to sexual activity, which I think both are independent of each other, you know. And so, I don't know. I want to talk about this later. I kind of have a yen to talk about the next thing, which is really important, especially because there was a 7.7 earthquake in Canada on the west coast in British Columbia today, or late last night. And one thing about this whole sex worker issue, the UN is also recommending we change our discussion, the labels of our discussion, from prostitution to sex working, because of the stigma attached to prostitution. But it seems as though it's okay when it's a novelty. And what I mean by that is that there was a 20-year-old Brazilian woman who was a student by the name of Caterina Miglioni, and a 21-year-old Australian by the name of Alex Stepanov. And they entered an online auction to sell their virginity. And Miglioni got $772,000 for her virginity. And Stepanov only got $3,000 for his. And it's interesting because Miglioni came out saying, if you only do it once in your life, then you're not a prostitute. Just like if you take one amazing photograph, it does not automatically make you a photographer. Yeah, semantics, lady. But at the same time, why is there something wrong with, you know, voluntarily and consensually and with mutual respect performing sexual favors for money? You know, you perform other favors with your time for money, you know, and at the same time, what is it, the second oldest profession, I guess, as it's been called? And I don't know. I personally don't think that there's a problem with it, as long as there's fidelity, as long as there's safer sex happening, and there's no hostile exploitation of either party. And some people think that no, it's unacceptable in all cases, but at the same time, I disagree. I think that we are sexual creatures. Sex is part of what we do. And it's a part of, you know, our emotional makeup. We can't have a fulfilled life without having a sexually fulfilled life as well. And so I don't see anything wrong with it. I would like to have someone to discuss this with, to balance me off with this. But I'm just going to save this, and I will talk about this later. Oh yeah, I guess, sorry, I keep getting distracted today for some reason. I'm looking at my notes, and in San Francisco, there is a new massage parlor called the Tata Massage Parlor, and it specializes in slapping your face for $350. So when it comes to things like this, where you go to a masseuse for pleasure, you go to a coffee shop for pleasure, we do all of these things for pleasure, and pleasure is a good. There's a good attached to pleasure. It relieves stress. It's a reward, you know, and we do these things, it's absolutely fine. We go to a bar, drink alcohol, pleasure. We watch a football game, pleasure. You know, we play sports, pleasure. So why is sex different? Why do you think sex is different? I don't know, sorry, I'm rambling now. All right, I just want to get to the last thing, because I got some work to do today. But these are the things we talked about last night. We talked about a critique of the partisan of the two-party system, as it happens with single-member district, and if there are other candidates, they should be given the platform like the media's choices. They should be given the platform too, because they're legitimate candidates. We talked about the Clean Water Act. We talked about the UN and prostitution, sex working, and now it goes down to Italy. And this is the last thing I'm going to talk about. I'm going to have this as a shorter podcast today. But in Italy, there was a swarm of earthquakes in 2009 in the town of L'Aquila. And a bureaucrat and six scientists convened for about an hour to discuss the potential for a catastrophic earthquake. And a week later, there was a catastrophic earthquake. Their findings were that a catastrophic earthquake occurring in that region were improbable but not impossible. And the earthquake occurred 6 days later. There are a lot of sixes in this situation. The earthquake occurred 6 days later after the six scientists convened, and the earthquake was a 6.3. And what happened with this was that these scientists were prosecuted. They were prosecuted for giving, quote unquote, inaccurate assurances following the foreshocks. And the bureaucrats of the town said that they could have evacuated the 70,000 people, and they went to jail for inaccurate assurances. It's nature. We don't have any 100% accurate ways of predicting major earthquakes yet. And so there, you know, in Italy, apparently, you don't go to prison until after your last appeal has been exhausted. But the fact of the matter is that the six scientists and bureaucrat are being subject to manslaughter charges and a conviction for manslaughter of 308 people because they didn't give an quote unquote accurate assurance that there would be an a major earthquake following it. You know, leave it to Italy, Galileo, now this. And so what does this say about the confidence in future readiness panels? I don't know. I'm gonna just wrap up now because I got some things to do, but I had to get the podcast out today, and I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to go back and tell you guys some things that are coming up that I think are pretty cool. Did I record for 45 minutes already? Wow, I'm talking a lot. This is actually getting easier. I hope you guys like this. So I want to go into some upcoming things. A bunch of us went to the San Diego New Atheist and Agnostics Halloween party last night. It was absolutely fantastic. And so tonight at the San Diego Association for Rational Inquiry, they're hosting author Richard Lederer talking about presidential trivia. And then Tuesday, and that's at 3900 Vermont Street, 6:30 tonight. Tuesday at 4044 Idaho Street, I believe, over at the North Park Rec Center, 6:30, we have David Diskin in town from San Francisco talking, Sacramento, sorry, talking about the Camp Quest West. And then coming up next week, after this coming week, because I guess Sunday's the first day of the week, on Tuesday the 6th, go out and vote if you already haven't. And on Tuesday the 6th, we are doing our book club on social contract books this month. On Tuesday the 6th, we have Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan, and then Tuesday the 23rd, we or it's 23rd, is it 6? Yeah, Tuesday the 20th, is it 20th? Yeah, Tuesday the 20th, for the third Tuesday of the month, we are talking about Jean-Jacques Rousseau's Social Contract. We're covering both of those books. I highly recommend you read those books, even if you don't attend, but at the same time, you'll get more out of it, but you don't have to have read them if you attend the book club, because we put together a pretty good presentation. And then for November, for the second Friday, the 2nd of November, come with us, walk in the San Diego Coalition of Reason's Light the Night Walk on Friday the 2nd. On the 11th of November, on November 11th, 1 p.m. at the Point Loma San Diego Branch Library, 3701 Voltaire Street, we are hosting Secular Coalition for America Executive Director Edwina Rogers. I want to pack the library for that, so definitely show up. And then for the 18th of November, we have our annual Freethought Family Thanksgiving potluck. Come on down for that. I think we'll be buying a turkey, and I would like you to come. It's a potluck. Bring a side dish. Bring a turkey if you want to. It'll be fantastic. And it's open to everybody. We have a cap on about 200 people, I think, who can fit in the Joyce Beer Center. But please come for that. And then in December, we have our annual membership meeting, and we are hosting Sam Singleton, Atheist Evangelist, on the 23rd of December, 7 p.m. at the Joyce Beer Center. And then for January, we have Matt Dillahunty for the 12th of January, Saturday the 12th at 7 p.m. That's $20. Sam Singleton is $10. And of course, lastly, we have our weekly coffee and conversation, which these programs are based upon. So yes, thank you for joining us today. I kind of rambled a bit. I apologize. apologize. I wanted to get through this. I'm trying to get used to doing this whole weekly podcast thing, and I hope you enjoy these as much as I have putting them out there. And it feels really weird just talking in a sort of conversational manner and not having someone to talk to with an immediate reaction. And so I'm imagining you guys, giving me stern looks of consternation or approving looks of agreement. And soon I'm gonna figure out how to have a call-in thing so I can do this live, because I don't have a lot of time to edit right now. So it'd be great to have a live show and spread this around to your friends. Anyway, I'm rambling now. I gotta go. Anyway, have a great day. Have a great week. See you tonight. See you Tuesday night, and see you. Is it this week? Yeah, this. See you Friday at the. Whatchamacallit, at the Light the Night event. All right. This is a production of the Humanist Association of San Diego. Thank you for joining us, and have a great week.